Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's weekly personal finance podcast where we discuss all things money. I'm your host Preeti Kulkarni, and in this edition of Simply Save, we'll focus on the recent budget announcements around the NPS. For one, Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman introduced a new NPS plan, Vatsalya, targeted at parents who wish to save for securing their children's future. In addition, she also increased the deduction limit on employers' contribution to employees' NPS from 10 to 14% under the new tax regime. To discuss the impact of budget announcements, steps needed to boost corporate NPS, and young India's retirement preparedness, we have with us today Sriram Iyer, CEO of HDFC Pension Fund.
So, sir, to start with, if you talk about the budget, your views on the budget announcements, there have been a couple for NPS. So, how do you view these announcements, and how do you see these announcements benefiting the NPS space?
So, broadly, there are two announcements that came through. The first one was enhancement of contribution, right. Employer contribution to NPS. That's the first change that came through. From 10%, it was enhanced to 14%. And the second was the NPS for minors, which is referred to as NPS Vatsalya. So I think both these recommendations and both these announcements are very, very welcome. In fact, I think the 10 to 14% enhancement in limit is it's going to be a good booster to existing employees who have already been contributing, and therefore it gives them an opportunity to up their contribution. I think more importantly, what's happened is that the fact that it featured in the budget announcement has helped draw people's attention to this corporate NPS vehicle. Because what we see, having, you know, being the largest corporate NPS BOP in the industry, we now manage close to 2,800 corporates with upwards of 3.3 odd lakh subscribers on the corporate NPS BOP side, as a BOP, right, as a point of presence where we go out and distribute NPS or we get people enrolled into NPS. So when we meet with corporates, even at a senior level amongst senior folks in corporates in the finance department, the awareness levels continue to be fairly low, and this product is still perceived as a product which is a 50,000 rupee product, surprisingly.
Right.
And I'm referring to financial services people, not just, you know, not finance folks in manufacturing companies or IT companies, but financial services folks are unaware. So I think, so that tells you what is the level of, level of lack of awareness around this product. The reasons are different. We can go down that path, you know, at some point of time. But now this 10 to 14, the fact that the finance minister announced this on the floor of the parliament, you know, said 10 to 14, suddenly people are saying, what is this, right?
Okay.
Therefore, it's helping us to have more meaningful conversations. We sent out a communication to all our corporate NPS, our nodal officers, all the corporates that we do work with, and to all the subscribers on the corporate NPS side saying, here's an opportunity for you to enhance your contribution, and thereby, you know, obviously you will therefore get a larger tax break to the extent of 40%. Of course, it's under the overall umbrella of 7.5 lakhs with ECCD2. And of course, equally importantly, this is an opportunity for you to up your final corpus by 40%, which is no mean amount, right? I mean, that can be a significantly meaningful difference that it can create. So I think it's drawn people's attention. I think that's the, let's say, second order effect of the fact that it got announced. It has caught people's attention. So that's a big positive. The second thing is obviously the fact that it is going to help people save more in the form of tax, as well as help them to build a more meaningful corpus when they retire, right? So I think both these will be the outcomes, and I think we're seeing that lot of interest. We are since the time the budget announcement has happened, we've had multiple conversations with our corporate partners, and have highlighted to them how it helps. We've sent them simulations and so on and so forth, and therefore it's meeting with the kind of response that we envisaged it would meet with. So that's as far as this is the first recommendation is concerned, or the first announcement is concerned. NPS Vatsalya again is a first of its kind. The fact that it allows you to now invest in NPS, starting the age of zero, right? Which means that right from the child's birth, you can start an NPS account is a big positive. The fact that the guardian or the parent can contribute is again something that is, you know, of course, the guardian or the parent would have to contribute because, you know, they would not have any source of income. The minor would not have a source of income. And the fact that, see, what will happen, I think there's been a lot of commentary around NPS Vatsalya. I think we need to keep in mind that this NPS as a product is a product meant for retirement, creating retirement savings. So we should not, most of the critics that I've seen are saying, oh no, but there's no liquidity and so on and so forth. But I think it is not meant to be there, right? This is a product. NPS is a national pension system. So why should we expect NPS to play the role of a product which is an education, let's say, funding tool? There are other vehicles that are there. So I think it is a bit unfair to sort of paint NPS Vatsalya with the same brush as other products. I think as a concept and as a thought, it's a very welcome thought. What can it do? Let's say the parent starts contributing even a small amount. There is an emotional angle, right? I mean, at the end of the day, all of us want to do things for our next generation. Could be children, could be, you know, extended family, could be nephews and nieces, whoever, right? I mean, we want to do things for them. If you're able to start that journey on their behalf, right, and even put aside a small amount, monthly, quarterly, yearly, whatever it is, right, the fact that over a period of, let's say, 10 to 18 years, you can start at zero. So therefore, you know, up to 18 years, since that till the time the child attains majority, if you saved, if you put in, and all of us know, right, LIC policies, number of LIC policies that all of us have inherited is because somebody started this for us, right? I think this product, given the fact that it is market linked, unitized, there is a equity exposure that you can take in this to the extent of 75% in tier 1. It can create a very, very solid platform when the individual then starts earning, which is at the age of, let's say, 23, 24, whenever they start earning, right, 20, 21, 22, whatever, right, people start earning, kids, I mean, these days, they start working probably earlier, some of them may start working earlier, later, whatever it is. But at that time, the starting corpus that they will have will be very meaningful. Imagine an 18-year compounding journey, best case. Worst case, if somebody even starts at the age of, let's say, 10, you still have 8, 7, 8 years of compounding journey. Imagine the base at which they will start. So by changing the starting point from, let's say, 0 to, let's say, 5 lakhs, right? The impact on the terminal value is dramatic. All of us know this, right?
Yeah.
Now, these are all things which people don't, you know, intuitively understand at the word go. And therefore, there is this whole school of thought that, oh, NPS Vatsalya, what's the... But I believe that it's a very powerful product. There is interest. We are seeing interest from amongst our subscribers saying, you know, we'd like to know more. You will have to wait and watch how the adoption picks up. Also, I think the regulator has been very, if you look at the kind of steps that have been taken to enhance attractiveness of the product over the last few years, specifically, you know, systematic lump sum withdrawal is something that came through, and we'll, I'm sure, talk about that later. These are all, you know, very, very progressive steps that the regulator has taken to make the product more attractive.
This finance minister has said that NPS Vatsalya will not come with any tax benefits. So, is that a limitation or a drawback, or you think parents will be enthused enough to start investing for their children?
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, you can talk about, you know, starting the journey on their behalf, right? Everything cannot be contingent on tax benefits.
Right.
So, I mean, there is a PPF, there is a Sukanya Samriddhi, there are, you know, various other vehicles that are there, right? So, I think everything should not be viewed from the lens of course, it helps if there is a tax disadvantage, tax dispensation available.
Right, and this, as we have both, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, and as we know, it comes with a very low tax structure. And
returns have been
good as
cost structure.
Yeah. And it has got a good return generating track record as well. But despite that, the pickup has been, let's say, it's been slow, not as fast as expected, and not as good as expected. So what do you think is preventing it from achieving its full potential? Are any regulatory restrictions or is the low cost structure itself a hurdle? Because does that in any way limit distribution reach?
So I think you need to reflect on this with a little bit of hindsight on what has happened in the last, let's say, 3 years, right? And if you look at the pace of adoption that you see in the last 2 years at least, right? And almost 3 months of this year, pace of adoption has increased quite a bit, right? So last 2 years, 2023, we had upwards of 10 lakh subscribers, new subscribers coming in. In the year 2024, I'm referring to FY24, we had just short of 10 lakh subscribers coming in. This is in spite of the fact that the new tax regime gained prominence in FY24. So yes, despite that, we saw reasonable adoption, right? Now, you look at it and examine it from the prism of saying, okay, mutual funds has taken off. This hasn't taken off as much as mutual funds. Fair comment, right? Does the low-cost nature of this product in some way have an impact on the distributor's willingness or attractive distributors' readiness to distribute this product? Partly, I think, right? Because I think we have to all acknowledge that there are a multitude of products that are available to a distributor and advisor today, be it a bank distributor or an agent or a mutual fund distributor. There are a slew of products that are available to the individual, right? And all of them will want to make sure that they are able to do their best as far as the customer's portfolio is concerned. And also balance it out with what their priorities are, right? So I think one needs to be pragmatic about this. Having said that, we have seen in the last 1.5 to 2 years, we have seen a very high degree of interest from both independent distributors, which are mutual fund distributors, as well as life insurance agents, who are saying that clients want to know more about this. Clients want to, invest in a NPS scheme. They want to put in the 50,000 rupees, or they want to start putting in money so that they are able to create some kind of a retirement corpus, which is, sort of in some sense delinked from their other investments that they would be making in the form of mutual funds or insurance, right? So we are starting to see a higher degree of interest. The industry, I don't have the statistics with me, but I think it will be interesting to look at the number of mutual fund distributors who have now become pension agents, right? Mutual fund distributors who sign up with one of the points of presence. We are also a point of presence. We have over the last year, I think we've added close to 5,000 mutual fund distributors who are now referred in our industry as pension agents, right? And there are corporate pension agents that are also coming up, because these are non-individual entities who want to distribute NPS, right? So as an NPS EOP, I have the also duty to make sure that we are taking this to a wider segment of the population on the retail side as well as on the corporate side. So certainly the interest levels have picked up. I think the mutual fund SAHI moment will happen sometime to NPS as well.
Okay.
Given the fact that more and more people now understand it, we are also doing, as a pension company, what is our role? Our role, of course, one is to manage the money that subscribers' interest is with. The other thing is to make sure that more and more people are aware of this product. So to that extent, we are very focused on making sure that more and more people are aware of it. Therefore, if you see the level of publicity, level of engagement with potential subscribers that has happened in the last 12 to 24 months, I think it has heightened quite significantly. Three new players have got added to the industry in the last, four new players, sorry, have got added to the industry in the last 24 months. That again shows that there is interest in the, amongst the financial services fraternity to really embrace this product. So I think it has picked up in the last, to summarize, it has picked up in the last, 3 years or so, in terms of enhanced adoption, both on the retail, which is the non-corporate side, as well as on the all citizens model, it is called, and the corporate NPS side as well. You have almost 17,000 corporates now who have signed up for corporate NPS. Adoption there is a different challenge, but definitely the pickup in terms of making it available as a part of Flexi is, is certainly something that we are seeing grow at a fairly rapid pace.
Okay, okay. You don't think, you touched upon it earlier, mandatory advertisation is not a challenge according to you? That is not what is preventing pickup?
Well, you know, there is a perception, right? Now, there is always, there are two ways to look at this, right? You can look at a glass half empty or half full, right? Mm. The way I would like to look at NPS as a product, now we need to examine what is it that this product is intending to do. This product is intending to, one, help an individual create a meaningful corpus by making sure that, you know, the cost leakages are minimal, which is the reason why the cost structure is 0.03 to 0.09% in terms of FMC, all of the costs put together. Fully loaded cost on a per annum basis for a 20-25 year time horizon of holding will be less than 15 basis points, right? Which is an order of magnitude different from what it is for other actively managed funds. So to that extent, I think that's one big issue, right? But that's one big advantage of cost leakages being very minimal here, right? And therefore, that in itself can have a compounding effect in terms of giving a significant upside in terms of the final terminal value. So one role that NPS plays is to help individuals create a meaningful corpus by keeping costs low, by playing, you know, by allowing fund managers to invest in equities in the top 200. Right now, that's it's top 200 as per market capitalization and SE, and of course, corporate bonds and government securities, right? And being transparent, being, you know, NAV driven, every single day, you know, every month end, you know what's there in your portfolio, right up to the last rupee, and so on and so forth. So that's one role that NPS plays, right? Let's not forget that this is referred to as a national pension system, right? Which means that at the time of superannuation, right, what does the product expect you to do? What does the product construct expect you to do? It expects you to put in X percentage of your total corpus that you've accumulated into a product which will lock in your cash flow for your lifetime, right? Now, therefore, thus, doing the fulfilling the need of playing the role of a product which can actually take care of the person's old age, right? Creating a corpus is one thing, but if that corpus potentially can be used for products which may not necessarily be in the best interest of the individual at that point of time, even one could take decisions which are which may come home later to roost, because it may not, I mean, you could take decisions there which are, you know, which may be not fully thought through, right? So therefore, in some sense, compelling an individual to put in 40% into annuity ensures that willy-nilly, let's not forget, annuity product, right? Today, the rates that you see on annuity is between 6.5 and let's say 7% per annum, right? Look at it in the context of the rate being the same 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, right? Now, if you were to go back in time and say 10 years back, what was the fixed deposit rate in banks? What is the fixed deposit rate today? Right? So, the risk of reinvestment that the product manages for you is a very powerful feature. There is no other product in the financial services industry which will guarantee a fixed rate of return for your lifetime. Right? Now, this is something that even financial services, today you ask a financial services professional, you know, this helps you manage the risk of living too long, right? And therefore, we need to look at it from that perspective, right? Now, compelling the individual to put in 40%, and that, of course, is beyond a corpus of 5 lakhs. So, let's, you know, so less than 5 lakhs, you can take the entire 100%. So, I mean, that's, of course, is not a very meaningfully large amount. So, therefore, doing that, make sure that you will start, and maybe these individuals will start appreciating it when they turn 70 or 75. Right.
And also this systematic lump sum withdrawal and deferment. So, any peculiar trends that you come across in their behavior, and even in terms of investment preferences in the last few years, let's say last 2 years?
Yeah. So, I think if you look at the accumulation journey, amongst the non-government employees, which is essentially the corporate NPS subscribers as well as the all citizens portal as it is referred to, there is, of course, we are seeing a growth in the contribution amounts. We are seeing, as a industry participant, we see every, we track what is the contribution amount that is happening on a year-on-year basis, it is almost tracking inflation, or it is tracking salary increments on a, at a broad level, 8-10% increase you're seeing in terms of contribution. That's number one. Number two, what we're also seeing is that people are now more conscious of what is the asset allocation that they've exercised. Let me give you an example. Specifically on the government side, the states that have adopted and states that have, and central government, of course, right? There we are seeing that, you know, the CG, the default scheme as it is called, default scheme has only 15% allocation to equity, right? And in 2019, the government opened it up to the employees were given the option to move out of the default scheme and move into, let's say, the non-default scheme. And there are limited options available to a government employee. Basically, the moderate and the conservative options under auto choice are available to them. We have seen a huge level of interest amongst government employees to move from the default to non-default because of the impact that it can have, right? So, the industry as a whole, again, this is the data that you can validate, but it's in the region of 4 lakh government subscribers have chosen to move out of the default scheme, which means that from 15% allocation to equity, they have moved to at least 25% allocation to equity, if not 50, right? This is a significant shift. We engage a lot with central government departments and state governments as well, and there is a lot of keenness to understand, you know, because till now it was perceived as a product where money is going and is sapna pension banega kabhi jaake. They have, for a long time, haven't taken control of this, saying, if I were to take these 2-3 steps on this, you know, by changing my asset allocation or doing whatever, right, I can potentially increase my corpus from X to 1.3X, 1.5X, right? That's what change in asset allocation can do to you, do to the corpus, right? Third thing that we see is, amongst the non-government space, which is be it PSUs or private sector companies, superannuation funds, which were dominant in the, let's say, 3 years back, majority of the contribution, wherever superannuation funds were available, money would essentially go to superannuation funds, right? As a part of your flexi structure, or as a part of your structure, the company could be contributing X percentage of your basic towards superannuation, right? Huge change happening because superannuation funds deliver, depending upon nature of the fund, but I think the range has been around 6.5 to 7.5%. That's the per annum kind of a return that superannuation funds have delivered, right? The stark comparison between returns from superannuation funds and some of the options in the NPS, I think employees are seeing it and they are getting more aware of what are the options available. So, a number of companies, both PSUs and private sector companies, which have a superannuation structure for its employees under the salary, have actively chosen to move to NPS, and employees who were earlier contributing to superannuation are actively choosing to now migrate from there to NPS. Okay. Right? So, this is another trend. And related to the first point, right, this 10%, 14% that happened in the recent budget, there were certain superannuation funds or certain companies which were contributing more than 10% to superannuation. And the fact that last year, pension funds delivered on the equity E-Tier 1, as it is called, they delivered anywhere between 33 and 37%, has definitely caught the attention of subscribers, and you are seeing larger allocations to equity.
And what are your, what are HDFC Pension's future plans? The next 2 years, next 5 years, what are your targets, or what are your future plans in general?
And I think it's a fair assumption to believe that HDFC Pension has been amongst the most consistent when it comes to this business. Right through periods when the FMC was one-eighth or one-fifth of what it is today, right? Right from then, HDFC Pension continued to remain committed to this business, continued to invest resources and, you know, capital into this business, right? That consistency has paid off for us, right? So today, as we speak, we are at 93,000 crores of assets under management, right? 2x of the next, or maybe close to 3x of the next private sector player, right? Why is that so? Why is it that we've been able to have such a large, you know, head start lead over, let's say, the others? It's because of the fact that the company has chosen to be very consistent and has looked at this product from a 30, 40, 50 year view, right? And we believe that that's how we should look at a product such as this, right? Secondly, that's been our focus. In terms of our plans, we will continue to focus on growing faster than the market. We've done that last few years, every single year. Our AUM grew by 70% last year, 69.5% to be precise, faster than the market. We added close to 1 lakh subscribers last year in our point of presence business, both corporate and retail. So we have, we are investing in our front office, investment front office. We are investing in our mid office, back office to make sure that, you know, we are able to continue to do justice to the trust that's been reposed on us by subscribers who have chosen us as a pension fund managers. And from an industry expansion perspective, we are investing significantly in people and technology. In fact, we should be launching some technology initiatives for our POP subscribers and for our corporates over the next 3 to 6 months. These are very interesting.
How well prepared is India, or young Indians rather, for retirement, and in terms of their attitude as well as actual execution of their plans, and your outlook for the sector?
So firstly, I think the writing is on the wall. Less than 7% of India's population today is upwards of the age of 60. But percentages can be misleading. If you look at the actual number, then the number is upwards of 11, 12 crores, right? It's a fairly large number. It's not inconsequential by any means. This number is likely to double in the next 25 years, right? So by which I mean the percentage is likely to double. Fertility rates, we seem to have got to a 2.1, which is the replacement rate. So therefore, growth may not be, you know, dramatic over the next few years. Having said that, this absolute number in itself could double, right? So your 10, 11 crores could potentially become 22, 23 crores in, you know, individuals upwards of the age of 60. So that's going to happen, right? India will age. We are very, very, our median age is today 28. At 2050, it is likely to be 38, right? So therefore, there are going to be more older folks around, you know, and some of us may not be around, but there'll be a lot more older folks around, right? So that's a writing on the wall. We are reaping the dividends of a rich demography right now, but that will change. So that's happening. Nuclear structure, I mean, all of the other data points which I'm sure you're familiar with, families are getting more nuclear, right? 4.9 members per family is come down to 3.2 members per family, right? So that's a significant impact change. Financial awareness is improving. If you looked at, I mean, I'm sure you looked at the National Household Financial Survey that RBI put out for FY23. Some interesting statistics there, right? Awareness around financial products, not just awareness, sorry, but the savings basket, how much is financial products and how much is real products, right?
Yes.
Real products still, real assets still continue to dominate, right? Yeah. Real estate continues to still dominate. And we spoke earlier about the fact that awareness around corporate NPS is low, right?
Yeah.
All of those things seem to suggest that there is a long way to go. So the headroom for the industry is humongous, right? Yeah. It's our duty to do this, make sure that we make India as a retirement ready, Indians retirement ready, right? Government has this, it says 2047, India Pension Society by 2047. Our current, you know, pension assets to GDP is in the region of 10%, right? It has to get to a meaningful number in the next, what the number is can be debated, but pension societies have pension to GDP asset ratio of upwards of 60, 65, 70%, right? Long way to go, right? All of these things obviously suggest that we need to. There is a lot of opportunity that is available.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for your time, and thanks a lot for this discussion. Thank you so much.
And with that, it's a wrap on this edition of Simply Save. For more news, views, and updates, do stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.